Izamit Carr, and I'm Telly Concepcion, and together we are Beyond the Numbers Podcast. We go beyond the numbers of sports and life to bring you the story within the story of the stories that matter. So come learn, grow, and have some fun with us. We are Beyond the Numbers Podcast. Before the business, Beyonders, it's time for Before the Business, where we answer your unanswered questions and find the numbers that went unfound in previous episodes. So in BTN 21, we talked about the cancellation of college football, how a faction of players started the hashtag We Want to Play social media campaign to start up the college football season, and we told you how the Pac-12 and Big Ten were opting out of the college football season. But, Amit, enter peer pressure. As we mentioned in BTN 22, parents and students were making their way up to Ohio to force the Big Ten to reconsider having a season. Well, we have breaking news this week as the Big Ten has given in to the pressure and they will now start a college football season in 2020 despite COVID and the warnings against it and two of their school presidents actually being MDs.
The Big Ten will kick off football this season and they start on the weekend of October 24th. Surprisingly enough, the league's presidents and chancellors unanimously voted to resume competition, and they did so citing daily testing capabilities, stronger confidence in the latest medical information, and all of this was announced just this past Wednesday.
What they did not cite, Amit, was actually the peer pressure that they're giving into and the fact that they're watching the other leagues ball out and have success. It's only been 1 week. I'm curious to see. Florida State had an outbreak of 850 students getting the virus. And if anyone saw any footage from the game they lost, by the way, it did not look like anybody in that stadium was social distanced. So when the football players join the student body at that university, I would not be surprised if there are more positive cases. And there's a game being canceled this week. North Carolina's football game is being canceled because their opponent has had a breakout of the virus on the team as well. So developing stories. In NCAA tournament news, the ACC coaches want to expand the NCAA tournament, the basketball tournament known as March Madness, to all D1 teams. There's actually 346 D1 schools eligible for the NCAA tournament this season. So that would increase the number of games from 67 to 345. Sounds like a money grab to me on it.
For sure. Like, think about all the extra TV time. There's a ton there that's going to bring in more money, but it's going to be more chaos. Like, they really want to embrace madness. And you're going to, I don't even know how many of those games anyone's going to even want to watch. But when there's gambling involved, people find reasons.
Yep, and sticking with basketball, Maya Moore. A year and a half ago, one of the best basketball players in the world. She's a four-time WNBA champion, a two-time Olympic gold medalist, stepped away from the game. She put her career on pause to devote time to her faith and increasing her ministry, and also to help someone who was wrongfully convicted and spent more than two decades in prison wrongfully convicted. He was charged for over 50 years for breaking into a home and shooting the homeowner, and the homeowner survived the shooting. No physical evidence had ever convicted Jonathan Irons to the crime. A judge ruled in March that the prosecution had suppressed fingerprint evidence that could have helped exonerate Irons. Thanks to Maya Moore, this was found out.
This past summer, all of Moore's work and that of many others finally paid off. Irons was released from prison on July 1st, and on this past Wednesday, the 31-year-old Moore and the 40-year-old Irons appeared on Good Morning America to make another announcement, Telly. They're married now.
Yeah, which is pretty awesome story. You and I both watched Just Mercy, I think, the same weekend, and we were texting about it. About, you know, wrongfully incarcerated people in this country and misrepresentation in the courts. So it's good to see that not only did she put her career, this is like LeBron James putting his career on hold, you know, for social justice, and she was successful in proving his innocence. So we're thankful for that. And ending on a light note, Amit, did you know what to do this Thursday? Like, were you bored on Thursday?
I haven't been bored in a long time, my friend. With sports back, it feels like there's always something going on.
Thursday, every sports league was playing. It's called a Super Sports Equinox. So a regular North American Sports Equinox is where the four major sports all play on the same day. That's happened 21 times. This one is a Super Equinox with the NFL, NBA, MLB, NHL, plus MLS and college football. Not to mention we had a tennis major. That's only happened twice before, and the last time was in October of 2018.
We've gone from no sports, what are we going to do, to too many sports, what are we going to watch?
What are we going to watch? Now let's get back to the business. So, Amit, it's time for our new segment, News from the NBA Bubble.
Bubble news.
Yeah. Bubble news. We're getting down to it. This thing is coming down to the wire, Amit. And in the past week, the Rockets have been eliminated. The Lakers have advanced. I don't think there's any surprises there. The Celtics have advanced over the Toronto Raptors. I believe we predicted that one, Amit. We did talk about how young they are, but also how much more athletic they were than Toronto. But I want to talk about the Nuggets, our team, our adopted team that we've been talking about on this show from the jump. Because I just feel like we're watching this team grow before our very eyes. And it's just nice to be a part of watching something grow, a team grow and mature like this. We've gotten to know the coach, Mike Malone, who's complaining about not seeing his family in the bubble. We're learning more every day about Jamal Murray. And I just felt like the Clippers just didn't give us that much to cheer for. My favorite Clipper is Doc Rivers, because come on. Is Kawhi really giving you a reason to cheer? Like, is he endorsing your cheers? Like, is he actively asking for you to cheer for him? He's just not that endearing. And we love the Joker. The Joker, Jokic, who's been balling out of control. It was just crazy to watch the Clippers implode, Amit. How do you go 0 for 11 in the fourth quarter? How do your two superstars, super max deal guys, not make a shot in the fourth quarter? You cannot be a closer and not make any points in the fourth quarter. And we could just see it slipping away from the hands of the Clippers in real time during that game 7. And it looked like the Nuggets were just having fun.
It was wild because they went into the half ahead, not by much, but they still went in ahead, and then it just looked like they got tired and they gave up.
They gave up three double-digit leads to put the Nuggets away. Three double-digit leads to put them away. 26, 23, and I think 19 to put them away in three consecutive games, and they could not close the door.
But can you put this on Doc?
Doc took responsibility because he's the coach. Do I put it on Doc? No. Players got to play. Okay. If the Bulls lost, was it on Phil Jackson? No. Michael would have been the first one saying that was on me. And if I got to score 100 because I'm surrounded by bums, I'm going to score 100 because I'm surrounded by bums. But he would not let the coach take responsibility for that. And I just feel like Paul George coming out and saying, well, we need more time together, we need more time as a unit, was such a horrible excuse. Just take responsibility. You guys lost.
Yeah. You choked. You lost. Move on.
It is the only time in history, I believe, that a team has come back from 3-1 in two series in the same playoffs I would not mess with, and I would not count this Nuggets team out of the whole thing. What I loved, Amit, was that after the game, Jamal Murray and Nikola Jokic were interviewed together, and Jokic said, when asked about the Lakers, look, we can't worry about them. The Lakers, we worry about us, we worry about our game, and we worry about having fun. I loved that answer. I loved the confidence that this team has right now. I texted Amit, I wish we could have recorded this thing Tuesday after the game, because we were pumped after that game.
It was a different energy. Definitely a different energy.
So, yeah, and it feels great. I got to say, it feels great to not have a team in it, to not have a dog in the horse, not have a horse in the race.
Or a dog in the fight. Either a dog in the fight or a horse in the race.
To not have a dog in the fight, a horse in the race, a team that you're going for, because then you can just watch games not having a heart attack and not feeling any kind of pressure. Amit, you must have this feeling every year with the Knicks, right? You can just watch playoff games, enjoy. You ain't got to worry about if the Knicks are winning or losing.
That's true.
You can just watch all the games and chill.
I mean, winning or losing, it's just like, oh, they're done losing for this year, on to next year.
But my favorite part about the whole thing is correctly how Jamal Murray pointed out that they haven't been getting any respect. Put some respect on their name. We have been. Jamal, we've been rocking with you guys from the jump. Come join us on Beyond the Numbers podcast. We would love to have a conversation with you and let everybody else know who's been down the Nuggets that we've been on the Nuggets train. We'll see how it goes. We'll see how it goes. I think Nuggets have the hearts of champions, and we'll see if they can produce. They're obviously going up against the best team left in the playoffs in terms of talent and cohesion. So we'll see. Denver's got to prove everybody wrong, but they've done it twice now. I think the thing about it, too, is that the Lakers haven't had much competition in these playoffs, and I think the Nuggets have been tested to the limit. And sometimes you don't grow and you don't get to your full potential until you're tested and pushed to the brink. And the Nuggets have been tested and pushed to the brink seven games in a row now, facing elimination, and the Lakers really haven't even had to stretch too much for their two series. So we'll see how this one goes, if they come out ready to play, if they've been resting this whole time, or if this presents a challenge because they haven't faced the challenge yet in the playoffs, really. I think the jury's out on that.
Yeah, because, I mean, we've talked about this, but I think the Rockets went dead, so.
AD is just a freak. I mean, he's 7 foot. He does all the things he does. LeBron, don't forget, is 6'9", okay, 240-something. So you can't – I don't know if you can put up a team with, like, no one over 6'8", 6'9", against that team.
Yeah.
That's, like, the one team you can't do that against. Back to the Nuggets. We talked about Mike Malone, coach of the Denver Nuggets. He complained, we left you with his sound clip. It's a shame the NBA is not letting my family in here. I miss my family, and I intend to advance to the next round. So you know what? I want my family in here because I'm going to these finals. Well, coach, coaches are now allowed family in the bubble. Celtics coach Brad Stevens and the Clippers reportedly pushed privately for coaches to be allowed to bring family to the bubble. But as we mentioned, fed up Nuggets coach Michael Malone demanded it publicly. Finally, the NBA is relenting, and as reported by Adrian Wojnarowski, the NBA is allowing team staff to bring guests into the bubbles, starting with the conference finals, per the memo shared with the teams. Per league memo, each team may host no more than a total of 10 staff guests in Orlando.
Telly, the breakdown of this is wild. Teams were allowed to bring 37 people, including up to 17 players, to the bubble. So that means there's at least 20 staff members, right? And just 10 staff guests for these 20 people?
Exactly.
What staff member gets to bring a guest, right? Who gets one? Who gets two? Who gets none because someone else has to bring multiples? Do the staff have to follow the same rules? If your guest is over 43 inches tall, do they count as another person now? Like, what are the rules?
The inner team politics are definitely going to get complicated because this is not an easy situation in the least. Now, you know, the coaches are bringing the wife and the kids, so you better hope you got a single coach coaching your team, or you got a coach that only got one kid, because then you're only going to be down to 7 guests total for the rest of that staff. And I don't think Jimmy working the video or Jimmy on the scout team in the back is going to be able to bring anybody. So, Jimmy, hang tight. We got you. Just hang tight. You ain't going to be able to bring family. We don't want to underscore we're having fun with this piece, but it is difficult to be separated from family and friends for months. The NBA has cited limiting the number of entrants as a key way to prevent coronavirus from infiltrating the bubble. Amit, they're in a safe, tight bubble. There's been no positives. Once you're in, I think it's good to go. So I think that's a poor excuse. Again, I think it comes down, as we said last week, this comes down to money. Because is this really going to satisfy anybody? If you're only allowed 10 staff members per conference finals team at the most, and even some of them won't even get to bring their guests in.
Yeah, I mean, to your point, I think, yeah, their argument is, hey, we're adding more moving parts, which essentially could create more soft spots in your shield. But come on, everyone that's in there, once they're in, they're locked down. Have we heard of any cases in the bubble?
No, but also let me introduce net, you're not. Teams are leaving. Yep. Teams are leaving. Groups of 37 are leaving. Allow groups of 37 to come in. Use the same rooms. Use the same testing protocols.
Yeah.
Whole teams are leaving. We already told you Houston got bounced. That's 37 people leaving from Houston's side. Toronto got eliminated. That's 37 people from Toronto. There's only 4 teams left now. You're only letting them a total of 40 when you eliminated, you know, 50 plus from the previous 2 teams already. So I think it's a poor excuse. I think they should let family in there to enjoy the last time in the bubble. I will say the team that's balling right now, the Nuggets, have been in the bubble the longest, a total of 71 days, when most other teams entered the day after they did at 70 days. So is time in the bubble gonna yield the best results on it? Is the team that's been in the bubble the most gonna come away with the whole thing?
You've got a theory. I see.
Lastly, we want to end with some fun. Jimmy Butler is balling out of control, Amit. As of right now, as of this taping, Friday, September 18th, the Heat are up 2-0 on the Celtics, which we told you is a coin flip between those two teams. They're evenly matched. But we may have to give the edge to the Heat, because Butler signed a 4-year, $140 million contract with the Heat this offseason, Amit. But he's not satisfied with that. And like all entrepreneurs, that is not enough money. Because while many NBA players use their precious personal item slots to bring memories from home, their favorite video game console, a PS4, an Xbox, Jimmy Butler decided to bring a French press into the NBA bubble and is now running his own coffee business out of his room. Everything's $20. No IOUs, Big Head Coffee. Shout outs to Jimmy Butler. Never be satisfied.
Yeah, you know, Butler joked on ESPN with Rachel Nichols on The Jump a while back, saying it was impossible to get a good cup at the NBA Restart campus. So he was really going to take matters into his own hands. And it turns out he was not kidding. And, you know, we even saw Jimmy with the shirt on. He had the white tee on.
Big Head Coffee. He's filed trademarks. He's filed trademarks on the name. He filed trademarks on the coffee. You can get an espresso all the way to an Olet. He is really serious about this. And Jimmy's agent confirmed that trying to get beans to him through quarantine has him feeling like El Chapo tunneling in beans under Disney World to get these beans. And I will point out, Jimmy said, we know what makes markets. We know what makes markets. It's supply and demand. He said these guys can afford it. He might bump the price up to $30 a cup this week. So we shall see. It's a nice side hustle for a dude that just signed a $140 million contract. I love the hustle.
It's NBA guaranteed money too. He's not worried.
He's not worried, but hey, coffee sells, man. He's thinking beyond his playing days. He wants to be the all-time greatest barista of all time. When you do something, do it big.
He's in Florida too, so he doesn't have income tax. Come on, he's living it well.
And it's straight cash. You gotta pay cash, no IOU. So this is brown paper bag money. This is brown paper bag money.
Butler's gotta have his own straight cash homie t-shirt.
Straight cash homie. Lastly, for NBA bubble news, Daniel House of the Houston Rockets violated the rules. And you guys can Google that one. That's it for news from the bubble today.
That's the news from the bubble.
News from the NBA bubble.
Bubble news. Yeah.
Bubble news.
Hey, Mal. Coach talked about the evolution of this group. Went back to the game 82 in Minnesota that you guys missed the playoffs with. Last year, you're in this same spot. You don't win that game at home, and now you make it over that hump. What, when you think about that, what has that evolution been like for you, and how did this team grow to a point where you guys are now in the Western Conference Finals?
We know what we got. And when we're all clicking, when we're making shots like that and playing defense together, you know, we're a top four team, top three team in the league, and we're trying to prove to be the number one. And we got to go into the Lakers and fight that series. But you know, we've been doing this. I don't know how many times we got to prove it over. You know, we've been doing this, and we have the talent to do it. And we're only going to get better. MBJ's not even starting yet. No, Will's not even here. So, like I said, we got a squad, and we just believe in each other, and we know we can go out there and win it.
NFL news, notes, and nuggets from week one. So a production note here at the onset. So this segment will not just be scores or highlights, but actually insights about the week that was in the NFL. As we've said, we strive to bring you the story within the story of the stories that matter. And there's no better place in the NFL this week than to start with the anthem. So we'll play what the Miami Dolphins played to their fans this week.
Is it authentic? That's the mystery.
Or is it just another symbolic victory?
Now there's two anthems. Do we kneel? Do we stand?
If we could just right our wrongs, we wouldn't need two songs.
We don't need another publicity parade.
So we'll just stay inside.
Until it's time to play the game.
Whatever happened to the funds that were promised? All of a sudden we got a collapsed pocket?
The bottom line should not be the net profit.
You can't open your heart when it's controlled by your wallet.
Decals and patches.
Fireworks and trumpets.
We're not puppets.
Don't publicize false budgets.
Ask the pundits and we shouldn't have a say.
If you speak up for change, then I'll shut up and play.
If we remain silent, that would just be selfish.
Since they don't have a voice, we're speaking up for the helpless.
It's not enough to act like you care for the troops.
Millions for pregame patriotism. You get paid to salute.
Lift every voice and sing.
It's just a way to save face.
Lose the mask and stop hiding the real game face.
So if my dad was a soldier, but the cops killed my brother, do I stand for one anthem and then kneel for the other?
This attempt to unify only creates more divide.
So we'll skip this song and dance.
And as a team, we'll stay inside.
We need changed hearts, not just a response to pressure.
Enough, no more fluff and empty gestures.
We need owners with influence and pockets bigger than ours.
To call up officials
and flex political power.
When education is not determined by where we reside.
And we have the means to purchase what the doctor prescribed.
And you fight for prison reform and innocent lives.
And you repair the communities that were tossed to the side.
And you admit you gained from it and you swallowed your pride.
And when greed is not the compass, but love is the guide.
And when the courts don't punish skin color, but punish the crime.
Until then, we'll just skip the long production and stay inside.
For centuries, we've been trying to make you aware.
Either you're in denial or just simply don't really care.
It's not a black-white thing.
Or a left-right thing.
Let's clean the whole bird.
And stop arguing about which wing.
Before the media starts wondering and guessing, they just answered all your questions. We'll just stay inside.
I wanted to play it there, Amit, so we can react. So a couple of things. To me, the themes of this NFL season are definitely the anthem, unity, and the backdrop of all of 2020, which is the coronavirus. I do want to point out that the head coach, Brian Flores, is African-American. And at the end of the piece, you heard him there. They answered your questions. That's what the media has been focused on this year. Why did you sit? Why did you kneel? Why did you stand? Why did you stay in the back? I thought this was a great way of addressing all of those issues and basically what these young guys are asking for. And for those that couldn't see the video, there were black players, there were white players, there were staff members, and there were also the head coach, Brian Flores, as mentioned. The line that stood out to me is, if you can't open your heart if it's attached to your wallet. I think that's a direct shot to the NFL, who now is doing this because this is popular. I mean, this is how we should all feel. And those that don't feel this way, you know, are getting shunned and are getting business taken away from them. But is this really what was inside their heart? Is this really how they feel about it? And the guys called them out. Where are the donations at? Where's the changes we said we were going to do in the community? You know, where are the situations that we said that we were here to fix? How can we put pressure on you to help us? I think that's the difference. You know, my background's football and your background is baseball, but we've been impressed by the NBA. Those guys were able to get their owners to turn the stadiums into polling places. They were able to turn some of that pressure into action. And I think the NFL saw that and they're like, how can we turn this into action? Much different construct within the NFL. Much less of a voice, but I'm glad that the Miami Dolphins decided to use it, and especially head coach Brian Flores, who's on a short leash as well down there, Amit. So I just thought it was important for us to start this 2020 NFL season in the most important spot before we got to any of the actual games. The other thing you'll hear and that you heard the players talk about is lift every voice and sing. People booed the moment of unity, which again, it shows where we are as a country. When all that was announced is the teams are gathering at midfield for a moment of unity, and you hear booing ringing out. This was the first anything of the NFL season that we saw, got to hear, got to experience. And it was sad that it was sullied by this moment. Before Thursday night's NFL season opener and after the national anthem played, the two teams gathered at midfield for a moment of unity, and audible booing could be heard from the crowd at Arrowhead Stadium.
I don't know if it sullied the moment. I think it just makes it real, right? It wasn't picture perfect. It wasn't everyone's on board. It wasn't rainbows and unicorns. We've all come together. That's the reality of it. I was kind of surprised it was as loud as it was, based on the fact that I think there was maybe 10,000 or 15,000 people there. And it didn't seem like there was a ton of people there to make that much noise. But, you know, JJ Watt said it, you know, the moment of unity was good, you know, but the booing during that moment was unfortunate. And I don't fully understand that. In his words, because there was no flag involved, there was nothing involved other than two teams coming together to show unity. It was a little weird, but it's the reality. It's turned into a political left versus right. Depending on what side you stand on, it doesn't matter what the issue is. It just, this is the stance I have to take or choose to take.
I guess I shouldn't be surprised, right? Like, this is the country we live in. But I think JJ Watt, you're right. It makes no sense to boo. It wasn't political. It was literally a moment of unity. That's like when they paint in the end zones in pink, beat breast cancer. Like, how do you boo breast cancer? Like, how do you boo prostate cancer screening? Cancer sucks. You know, these things are things that should be unifying. Unity. It didn't say this group over this group. This group matters, leaving, excluding any other groups. Unity involves us all. Let's be united. The United States of America. That's the part that didn't make any sense to me. Hashtag unity gets booed. That's like booing hashtag cancer sucks. Who's on the other side of that? I mean, that's the part I think that didn't make any sense. And that the 15,000, like, when you're booing something like that, and we've talked about this before, you are not booing the show during the anthem. You are not booing like any of the other issues that you think that this movement stands in opposition to, right? We've explained Black Lives Matter doesn't mean any other life matters less, but it does show that the folks in the audience just really don't care about that at all. And what's crazy is, like, just go all the way, right? Like, why would you go to a stadium and cheer on a group of individuals that you don't think should be afforded basic human rights? To me, that's the whole thing. Why would you go cheer and scream and clap and applaud these guys if you don't agree with anything they said, but it's basically perform for me. We own you, perform for us.
Yeah, I mean, shut up and play has always been the conversation, right? That's been kind of the rhetoric.
Well, I think that's why the Dolphins piece was so important, because they talked about action, right? They talked about, let's put all this aside. This is a sideshow. This is to distract, to your point. This is a distraction. Whether I stand or kneel, whether I come out or don't come out, is a distraction. Here's the message we want you to hear. Listen to this. There is no distortion. It is coming from our mouths collectively, from the team. And they put it to rest there.
And to your point and to things we've talked about recently, it is a different conversation, right? The NBA was very much about, when you get to post game, this is what we're going to talk about. I'm going to take my time to talk about this. I think the NFL, those guys may not necessarily feel as comfortable or want to have those conversations as much.
Why? Well, they can, right? It's job security, right? In the NBA, your contract's guaranteed. And we've talked about this in the show. Superstars make the NBA, right? There's 15 guys per team. Divide the money that way. In football, there's a 52-man roster, okay, and guys can be replaced. Some of the greatest players, okay, have a hard time finding jobs. In some positions, like running back, you hear Mina Kimes on ESPN talk about all the time. You can plug anybody in at running back, and they shouldn't really be paid because they're not that valuable of a position. And that definitely puts you in a position of subservience to your ownership, to your coaches, because you cannot speak out because your job will be removed. Now in the NBA, on the inverse part of that, right? If LeBron says something, the NBA is not firing LeBron James. LeBron James makes the NBA so much money that whatever he says really goes, which goes all the way back to what Patrick Beverley said. If he say we playing, we playing. LeBron wanted a season. Everybody else wanted to sit out. They didn't. We had a season. We are in the bubble, right? And also the Milwaukee Bucks boycotted and were going to sit out the game. And there were reports that LeBron was not for that decision and did not want to stop playing because he's chasing Michael Jordan for some rings. So it's very, very different, not to get too far away from the NFL, but the NFL guys just don't have as much leverage in the situation as the NBA guys. But I'm glad to see the Miami Dolphins using their platform. Like I said, that's a huge chance, especially for a black head coach in the NFL. We've talked about how hard it is for black coaches to get jobs, and Brian Flores, and a team that, frankly, we're not talking about the Patriots, who have won 6 Super Bowls and, you know, job security is in abundance. We're talking about Miami Dolphin, a team in which the last 10 years things have changed dramatically every year. So shouts out to them.
And to close it out, I think the last piece of that, and I agree with you that, yes, they don't necessarily have the voice that the NBA players do, but your stat of the day was 10 black quarterbacks. And if there is a position that is not easily replaceable, especially when you look at some of the names in that list of 10, that's it.
We've talked about cap. We've given the numbers on cap. Fair. Cap should be in the league.
That's fair, but
cap's better than Danny Dimes.
Let me tell you right now.
Cap is better than some other guys I saw this week.
If you don't have
a job.
If Mahomes or Lamar Jackson was like, nope, I'm out, I think Kansas City has a problem. I think the Ravens have a problem. I think the NFL has a problem, because that's the face in a lot of ways.
And that's where you have to give Colin Kaepernick a lot of credit, because you're rolling the dice on that $500 million deal and threatening to leave, where the NFL could say, okay, bye, see you later, versus you know for a fact 100% the NBA is not going to do that in the NFL. Colin Kaepernick took that chance, and he ended up losing in the short term, I think winning and being on the right side of history in the long term. So only 2 stadiums had fans week 1. The rest had no fans in attendance. One of those teams is asking nearly a dozen fans to go into quarantine this week after learning there was a fan infected with COVID-19 at its game. It was the game where there was booing. So I don't know if booing and COVID-19, catching COVID-19 are related in this case. But the Kansas City Chiefs announced on Thursday 10 fans have been told to go into quarantine for potentially being exposed to COVID-19, According to the Kansas City Department of Health, the infected fan watched the Chiefs' September 10th opener against the Texans from box seats at Arrowhead Stadium. The fans who are being asked to quarantine were all sitting in the same quote-unquote pod as the infected fan. There were a total of 15,895 fans in attendance at the stadium, with all fans being separated into their own pods to prevent an outbreak.
The individual and the individual's groups were seated in the lower level of the stadium, the chief said in a statement, and by design, the stadium's COVID protocol plan limited potential exposure to a single seating zone within the stadium. All staff with known interactions with the positive face, with the positive case were required to wear personal protective equipment, PPE, including a mask. Additionally, the protocols in place at the stadium require all attendees to wear masks inside the stadium. They did a pretty good job, probably better than FSU, but...
Definitely better than FSU. Definitely better than FSU. I'm not rooting for anything bad, but I'm interested to see what the numbers are because that was horrible.
But, I think for the most part, it looked like people were doing a good job. And as we watched any of the games where there were people in the stands, fairly spread out. I mean, there were still clusters of people, but it's still spread out.
And the pods make sense, right? Because the pods are isolated. So they can notify the 10 people sitting in that pod. If everyone had on their mask the whole time during the game, then there's a small chance that anybody in the pod got it. They could still be more than 6 feet away within that pod. I think this is an abundance of precaution to let the folks know that, hey, there was somebody in there. My question, how did he get in, right? Because if they're testing and temperature checking and doing everything at the doors.
Yeah, but if you're asymptomatic, no one's gonna
know. Not if they're given the rapid tests, which some of the teams said that they're doing. Although a fan tested positive for COVID-19, the Chiefs and the Texans made it through the whole game without any positive tests. And according to ESPN.com, all player tests came back negative following Kansas City's 34-20 win. However, a groundskeeper at the game did test positive, but he wasn't near any players at any point during the game. Like we mentioned, there were only one of only two teams, along with the Jaguars, who had fans in attendance week one. The NFL allowed each team to set their own attendance policy with the understanding that the policy would have to follow local health guidelines and protocols. To me, this makes no sense. Either let in fans league-wide or do not let in fans league-wide. One, because it could be perceived as an advantage for the teams that do have fans in attendance. Two, because then you make this thing political, where the South will open, the North will not open, the West will not open. Safety protocols we've seen throughout this virus have been made political more than they have been about true safety.
To your point, I don't know if 15,000 fans are going to make a difference in terms of how a team performs. It's not going to be
rocking. Pretty loud in Kansas City. I was surprised it was as loud as it was for the 15,000 fans. And as a player, I'll say you wanted to figure out how to stick Bill Belichick in this part of the pod from production notes. Stick him in right here. When there's no fans, it's a practice. It is a practice. And whether there's 15,000 fans or 10 fans or your mama is sitting in the stands, you're looking up because you're performing in front of people. When there's zero fans, you're performing in front of nobody. We asked the question last week, Ahmed, if Alabama loses and the stadium's empty, did Alabama really lose? So I would push back on that point and say 15,000 doesn't sound like a lot, but guess what? That's a sold out basketball arena. And that's enough people to put on a show. And that's enough cheering to get you going into the end zone in the fourth quarter. And that's loud enough to hear boos, as we heard and we mentioned at the top.
Bill, you are obviously someone who has seen a lot of football in your day, been involved in a lot of games. What was the atmosphere like in the stadium without fans there? Can you compare it to anything else that you've experienced in your football life?
Practice.
But nothing in terms of a game. What was your what were your thoughts on the atmosphere overall? Was it strange, obviously?
It's like scrimmaging the Titans or scrimmaging Detroit or scrimmaging the teams that we scrimmage. There are a few fans there, but basically there's no fans there. It's just the competition and there's some energy from your teammates and your own energy. So that is what it is. But that's what it's like out there in practice. There's no fans in practice either.
It's time for our new segment, NFL Nuggets, where we go beyond the numbers and bring you the stories within the story of the stories that matter within the NFL. Watching the NFL this weekend, some observations. Bootleg mask, Ahmed, what's up with that? There was no consistency, no continuity, to borrow a catchphrase from ESPN. Come on, man. Like, come on, NFL. At least give the coaches something decent to wear. Andy Reid was forced to make a homemade shield out of those old plastic things we used to put in our binders in elementary school to keep our homework from getting crumpled up.
Yeah, it was wild. I don't understand why the NFL doesn't have that as part of just their uniform. You would think if they're asking everyone.
They give them hats. They give all the coaches matching hats with the same branding on it. They give the coaches the same sweaters. If you see it, just all you do is change the team name. They give them the same visors. They give them the same polos to wear. Why can't they give them the same PPE?
Telly, Major League Baseball has it. The NHL has it. The NBA has it. The NFL even has it on their website, NFLshop.com. You could buy branded masks for any of the teams. But you know who doesn't have it? Any of the players on the sideline, any of the coaching personnel.
So the NFL has put in many protocols to avoid the spread of the virus throughout the league and to keep the players, coaches, and staff safe. One of those rules is that any individual with access to the bench/sideline area, from coaches to medical staff, must wear face coverings on the sidelines at all times. Well, as Ahmed and I discussed, this ain't happening. The NFL sent a memo on Monday concerning coaches not wearing masks while on the sidelines during a game. The coaches are required to have masks on at all times and will be disciplined if they don't comply. The memo was written by NFL Executive Vice President of Football Operations, Troy Vincent, and was directed to coaches who were not seen wearing masks, one being the LA Rams head coach, Sean McVay, who kept pulling that thing down the whole game, Ahmed, against the Cowboys. And we could tell because if you watch Hard Knocks, he was never wearing his mask at practice on Hard Knocks. So that's an easy one.
Which is weird because watching Hard Knocks, he wanted a visor. He got a visor, he used the visor, and then I guess it didn't look cool enough for him, so he's like, I can't look like I'm wearing a visor. You know, Vincent came out with a statement which stated, we must remain vigilant and disciplined in following the processes and protocols put in place by not only the league, union, and clubs, but also by state and local governments. The NFL and NFLPA game day protocols, which reflect the advice of infectious disease experts, club medical staff, local state government regulations, and requires all individuals with bench area access, including coaches and members of the club medical staff, to wear face coverings at all time. The memo went on to say that the coaches who are not seen wearing masks will result in accountability measures being imposed against offending individuals and or clubs. The face coverings must be worn as designed so that it securely fits across the wearer's nose and mouth to prevent the transmission of the virus. I love that they have to explain to all these people how to wear a mask. It's not a chin strap. It's a mask.
You know how you fix this? Issue NFL uniform masks for the teams and the coaches so we're all in the same boat. That's how you fix that issue.
And you do that, and then you do it the same way you find any other uniform impropriety, right? When guys wear, you know, hey, I'm going to wear this colored this, or I'm going to wear different shoes, or I'm going to wear, right? They just get fined.
Yep, you have to wear this brand, you have to wear it this way, and if we catch you out of compliance, like you said, you get fined. Right. Sticking with health in the NFL, Ahmed, I live in San Jose, in Santa Clara. I can see Levi's Stadium outside of my window the last 2 weeks because we've had forest fires out here and I can't see anything out of my window. The air quality index in Santa Clara on Sunday was projected to be between 151 and 200, which is classified as, quote, unhealthy for all groups due to the wildfire smoke. And you know what, Ahmed? At 6 a.m. on Sunday, it was 171, and the league made the 49ers play football against the Arizona Cardinals. You know I love football, and we've been talking about health and safety protocols, but my question here really is, who makes this call? Because the league would consider calling off the game if there is, quote, definitive evidence that the air quality index will remain above 200 at the stadium for a significant period of time on game day. I will repeat, between 151 and 200 is classified as, quote, unhealthy for all groups. I'm pretty sure NFL players qualify as all groups. I'm pretty sure I got alerts on my phone that told me, do not go outside because it is dangerous for you to go outside. But we're gonna make these guys run as fast as they can and take deep breaths of all of this stuff in the air, including houses, trees, cars, and everything else that's been on fire out here. It's crazy to me that they made these guys play.
And for what it's worth, a normal air quality is 50 or below is normally good. So it's crazy.
Thank you for putting that in perspective. He didn't even practice on it Friday because the air quality was so bad. Yeah. And I'm telling you, because I live right here, it was criminal that they made those guys play. According to Tina Sindler, an allergist at Stanford University, it is a big health risk to get on the field. Quote, they are out there and it's sustained activity. It's vigorous activity, not just a little bit of activity. It's hours, she said. She adds that there isn't a lot of data on how much smoke impacts a person's health. Quote, even in healthy individuals, exposure can lead to inflammation and we don't completely understand what that means long term. Why couldn't they just have postponed this game and played it on Monday Night Football or push it towards the end of the season? They play twice because they're within the division. Sticking with health in the NFL, Dak Prescott came out this week and revealed that he was dealing with depression during the onset of the coronavirus pandemic and sought help after the death by suicide of his brother Jace. In an interview with In Depth with Grant Bessinger, Prescott discussed the burden Jace went through after their mother died of colon cancer in 2013, saying, quote, he didn't know how to be vulnerable about it. He then spoke about his own struggles and receiving news of his brother's suicide in April. Quote, honestly, a couple of days before my brother passed, I started experiencing depression. I didn't know what I was going through, to say the least, and hadn't been sleeping at all. But for one night, I slept the best I've slept, missing 10 plus calls from Tad and giving my dad enough time to come in my bedroom and tell me what happened. So I woke up after the best night of sleep I've had in 2020 from the worst news, some of the worst news I'll ever get. Prescott, in a news conference Thursday, elaborated on his mental health, saying he struggled with the isolation of quarantining away from others during the pandemic. Quote, when you have thoughts that you've never had, I think there's more so than anything a chance to realize it and recognize it, to be vulnerable about it. I talked to my family, talked to the people around me as I did at the time. Some of them obviously had dealt with it before, was able to have those conversations and then reach out further just to more people. And I just wanted to highlight the bravery it took for Dak Prescott to come forward and thank him for sharing that, because we've highlighted on this podcast before, anyone can deal with depression and anxiety. It does not discriminate against sport you play, what profession you're in, what skin color you have, what background you have, or your socioeconomic status.
To Dak's credit, you know, when you talk about leadership, I look at that as extremely strong leadership to be able to come out and be able to admit to that and have that conversation. And I think Kevin Love said it, you know, Dak really has helped a lot of people by sharing his story and kind of letting people know, hey, I'm a big NFL quarterback, right? I'm supposed to be on top of the world. Even I'm going through stuff like this.
And as Tony Reale has said, mental health is health. And we need to take that very seriously. So we'll make the pivot here to injuries. And I'm sure you've noticed that there were a lot of injuries in week one of the 2020 NFL season. You could definitely see some rust on the guys. I think this is why they need preseason, right? It's to work out some of the kinks. I know it always took a while when the season started to get used to getting hit, used to taking hits, and you got to build up the bruises a little bit. You know, that part's important. I think people lost sight of that a little bit.
And I mean, we saw this with the shortened preseason when we had the lockout early. You saw guys not getting up to speed, not getting the reps. On top of that, with COVID, you see how practices are different, not as much touch, a lot more just going through the motions rather than having those full all-out practices. So all in all, I think that has all impacted guys just being ready physically to be able to do this. And that's not saying they're out of shape. It's just, it's a different beast when you're going full speed.
And on to the question that I'm getting the most, Amit. What happened to Tom Brady and the Bucks? First of all, I couldn't even watch the game because they made the 49ers play out here in the dangerous smoke conditions that I just detailed. So they showed the 49ers game here. I was not able to watch the Bucks. But from what I saw, as I mentioned in our preview episode, in our preview of what we talked about in the season, it's going to take time, right? No preseason. Tom Brady was on the same team for 20 years. He made the same drive to practice for 20 years. He threw to the same guys in the same system with the same audibles. New system, new change of scenery. First year coach and Bruce Arians for the Bucks. So not only is Tom Brady new, but there's a whole new system in Tampa, and it's going to take time for these guys to get used to one another.
And like we said, no preseason. One of the things that people were worried about with the lack of preseason, all the COVID items, was that rookie quarterbacks, you know, early second year quarterbacks and guys in new systems don't have the same time and same opportunity to work like they have in the past with guys.
Yeah, but now we're going to prove ourselves wrong because we move into revenge and we got a new player on a new team in DeAndre Hopkins who got 14 catches again out here in the smoke, but he got 14 catches from Kyler Murray. They made sure to get him involved. They made sure to throw him the ball. And Amit, as a little point of revenge, Houston, who traded him away, do you know how many catches their wide receivers had in total?
If I remember correctly, lucky number 13.
One less than DeAndre Hopkins had by himself.
You think that was intentional? I mean, I don't think they could make it intentional.
Take that for data. Take that for data. That's what he had to say about that. Take that for data. Another expatriate missing the mark. Steven Gostkowski missed 3 field goals and an extra point. Somehow, Amit, the mafia, the Patriots knew. They cut this man before he got his misses. Why couldn't he miss in the AFC Championship games? Why couldn't he have missed in one of those dang Super Bowls they got? No, he misses 3 field goals with his new team.
But he was still hailed the hero of that game.
Because only in football can the kicker miss 10 kicks and then kick the game winner with seconds left and still be the hero. He was also entitled to a $2 million veteran roster spot because he played that game. That's I'm sure wild. They would want that money back if they
That's
knew.
That's wild. It should be noted that no team has failed on 3 field goal attempts in one game at Denver since 1987.
That's wild. Denver is such a kicker-friendly stadium because the air is thinner, the ball travels farther. So,
and it wasn't just Gostkowski. Overall, kickers league-wide only hit 71.6% of their field goal attempts in week 1, which is the worst week the NFL has seen since 1998, Telly. I was 12.
Kickers need preseasons, too. And Amit, I was flipping around through games. I saw the missed catch by the Detroit Lions in the last seconds of that game. Could anything be more Lions than actually catching the ball, releasing the ball, losing the game to Mitch Trubisky? Y'all made that dude look like a baller.
Yeah, Mitch's fourth quarter made him look like Patrick Mahomes.
Right? Y'all made him look like a baller.
Mitch was the number 1 quarterback picked in that draft. Mahomes was number 10.
He was taken much farther behind Mitch Trubisky. And let's just say that, you know, that hasn't played out. Somebody got that wrong.
But let's talk about the studs and duds, man.
I like this is a new segment we're doing, studs and duds of the NFL.
And let's be honest, before we go anywhere, Matt Patricia is not going to be a stud.
No, definitely a dud. Definitely in the dud camp.
But let's talk about an interesting dud that had me super excited for the season. Kirk Cousins with 34 yards, Mitch Trubisky with 26 yards, Daniel Jones, Danny Dimes with 22 yards, Gardner Minshew with 19 yards, Tom Brady with 9 yards, and Ben Roethlisberger with 9 yards. all had more rushing yards than Saquon Barkley in week one.
Say that one more time. Tom Brady, Thomas, the 42-year-old Brady, had more rushing yards than Saquon, the Thunder Thighs Barkley.
Wow. Thunder Thighs. Okay. I'm not even going to touch that.
Quarter quads? What do you want to call them?
No, you're good. You're good.
The Browns look like the same Super Bowl contenders they were in 2019. And that's a joke right there, because they definitely don't look like Super Bowl contenders. They look like the same old Browns. New coach, new system, same Browns.
Danny Dimes, I really thought that Daniel Jones was going to overtake Carson Wentz in fumbles lost since the beginning of last season. Carson Wentz was at 18. Danny Dimes is also at 18. Keep in mind, Daniel Jones did not play the first 2 weeks of last season. So we'll see. We'll see how that ball protection goes for him throughout the season. I still expect plenty of fumbles for him as he goes throughout this second season for him.
And LSU, go Tiger! Clyde Edwards-Helaire had more rushing yards after contact, 106, than any running back had rush yards total in week one. They got a stud on it. He comes fresh off winning the national championship. He's joining the Super Bowl winning team. And you know what? The only thing the Chiefs didn't have last year? A running game. They have one now. It's going to be dangerous, because whether you stack the box to try to stop him, they're going to beat you over the top. If you throw it deep and you don't have anybody in the box, he's going to run it all over you in the nice package of 5'9", 206 pounds, running cats over. Sticking with small running backs, Jacksonville had a three-name, smaller running back.
Oh,
who played. Maurice? That's the pivot. Maurice Jones-Drew.
Okay.
I'm taking the long way to get to just telling you guys that Gardner Minshew became the fourth quarterback in NFL history to complete 95% of his passes in a game. He completed 19 of 20 passes versus the Colts. I think it's clear to see that the Colts' weakness is their secondary. They need some corners back there. Holla at your boy. I still got some gas left in the tank. Let's wrap this thing up. And before the business, we shared the return of the Big Ten, giving in to peer pressure to start their college football season, and how we've gone from no sports to all the sports.
We talked about our team, the Nuggets, advancing to the Western Conference Finals, and Jimmy Butler selling coffee for $20 a cup.
And with the NFL starting its 100th season, we start our new segment, NFL Nuggets, and talk about the challenges it faces with the anthem, unity, and COVID-19. Thank you for going beyond the numbers with us. We're a weekly podcast dedicated to going beyond the numbers of sports and life to bring you the story within the story of the stories that matter. We're available on all major podcasting platforms, including Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Google Podcasts. Whatever you're listening on now, please be sure to click the follow or subscribe button to get our latest content.
And remember, you can find us on Instagram, Beyond the Numbers Podcast, and on Twitter at Beyond TN Podcast.
Until next time, peace.